I'm Dave Love. I work at the Johns Hopkins Center for a Livable Future. I'm the session organizer. We've got a great panel today. We've got Cassin Trenor from Greenpeace, Dr. Charlie Santeri from from Purdue University. He's also a AAAS fellow this year. And Aaron Seafried from EPA Region 10. So I'm pretty excited about so today the theme is aquaculture, and the topics will be a sort of a potpourri of lots of different aspects of public health and environment issues surrounding aquaculture to really give you to engage you in where is aquaculture now and where do we want to go in the future. And it's interesting to note where we are now in aquaculture, because this is really an historic moment this year. There's more fish coming from farms than there is being caught in the wild this year. And that's a new phenomenon. You know, if you think back, when was the last time we had more meat from land coming from farms than coming from hunters? That maybe 100, 200, 300 years ago, maybe longer. So farming from the sea is this new phenomena, and it's new and it's old, but in some ways, this is a very new process to have seafood. So with my talk, I'm gonna give you a little bit of background, sort of frame out an introduction to aquaculture and public health issues, just sort of a 10,000 foot view so you can have a little perspective that'll help with the next several talks. Let's see, to start with just some business for the session, we're gonna hold the questions until the end, at the end of all the talks, except for Charlie's talk. He'll have to leave after his talk so we can have questions for him after his talk. As far as disclosures, I don't have anything to disclose. No conflicts of interest. Other presenters will make their disclosures if they have them at their talks. A little bit of background about myself. I work at Johns Hopkins. Before that, I got a PhD from University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. My background's in microbiology, but a strong interest in food production and aquaculture and seafood safety. So let's see where, in terms of global seafood production, I alluded to this in the introduction that we're at this point where wild-caught fisheries are, this red line is wild-caught fisheries. You can see in the last maybe 20 years or so, that it looks pretty flat, the tons of wild-caught seafood. And that's really due to overfishing. They're just a lack of fish out there to catch. But at the same time, the slope, the total trend in seafood production keeps rising. And that's because aquaculture has filled in where wild-caught production has left off. So we've had this phenomenal growth in aquaculture, about 7% growth a year, which is really amazing. Let's think a little bit about where our seafood comes from, because it's not just enough to know that we have it in the grocery store. Well, we know that we can tell where it comes from. If you look at, there's a sort of semi-new food labeling called COOL, country of origin labeling. It also tells you the production method. And so you can know whether something's farmed or wild-caught. It should be on the label of the package if it's a fresh, frozen, or semi-prepared seafood. And in the U.S., our favorite seafood far and away is shrimp. It really is. But it's interesting to know that most shrimp that we buy in the U.S. comes from Southeast Asia. And much of that is farm shrimp. We also get shrimp, that's mainly China and Thailand. So a lot of imports. Looking down the list of other popular seafood, salmon. Historically, about half of the salmon we got in the U.S. was farmed salmon from Chile. But in the last couple years, there's been a virus that's totally wiped out the salmon production in Chile. So not so much farmed salmon from Chile, but we still get quite a bit of farmed salmon from other countries, like Norway, the UK, Canada, for example. Moving down the list, another seafood product that's raised by aquaculture, tilapia. Far and away, it's very amenable to aquaculture. And in fact, about half of the tilapia we eat in the US comes from China, 20% from Taiwan, and the rest from various Central and South American countries and Southeast Asian countries. So why is it important to know where our seafood comes from? Well, it's critical to know that because different parts of the world, different countries have different regulations that are either strict or lenient in how aquaculture can be raised, what types of inputs, veterinary drugs, management practices. And often in the developed countries, we have stronger food safety laws. So if most of our seafood that's raised in aquaculture comes from developing countries where there are weaker rules, then when we import those products, we are all of a sudden shocked. Oh well, there's some drugs in here that we think are prohibited, but they may be using. So for all people who are visual learners, here are some photos of different seafood products raised that can be raised in aquaculture. I wish I had a laser pointer. The top left. Salmon, catfish running down, carp, tilapia, some bivalve mollusks, different crustaceans, aquatic plants. Not just for food. We also use aquaculture to restore environments that are degraded. Like in the Chesapeake Bay, we raise oysters for restoration to repopulate reefs. Also for restocking, for recreational fishing. When you think about how long people have been doing aquaculture as an activity, it's not all that long when you compare to how long we've domesticated land animals and plants. This graph shows the percent of total species domesticated over time. And for your sheep, cattle, goats, they've all been domesticated far, far earlier than even the first fish. I think tilapia and carp were both domesticated about 4,000 years ago. But salmon and cod, they are just about 50-year-old experiments. We've only been doing salmon aquaculture for just a very short period of time in the grand scheme of domestication. And what that means to me is we made a lot of mistakes. We're on a learning curve. Is this the right fish to farm? How do we farm it? Those type of questions those kinks are being worked out. 1,000 years from now, this graph may look a little different. I think we'll understand aquaculture a little bit better. To give you sort of a framework for how to think about aquaculture, this is a 2x2 table, which I hope public health people in the audience appreciate 2x2 tables. There, but just as a mind map, how to think about, let's look at these two columns. There's intensive production. That's where the operator, the farmer, provides all the feed. All the inputs are put into the system. Extensive farming, such as these photos from the Ivory Coast and Vietnam, less inputs, sometimes no inputs. Sometimes let's say this upper right-hand corner, the tilapia just eat whatever's available in the pond. A good analogy to think about this is think about extensive aquaculture is like free-range cattle. just grazing, eating what's available. Intensive aquaculture, a little bit more like feedlots or industrial food animal production. So if that helps you think about the two. You can also divide the production methods as a closed system or open system. You know, a closed system is one in which fish are, and shrimp, they're raised in tanks and ponds on dry land sometimes. Could be either fresh water or salt water. In open systems, this is a shot several hundred feet underwater in Hawaii, or just below the water surface. In these open water systems, they, instead of having a lot of human inputs, actually you rely on natural services to kind of clean the water. Water currents wash away the waste. And really this, the motto here for these types of farmers is the solution to pollution is dilution. And we know sometimes that doesn't always work if you've got a lot of farms in close proximity to each other. So in broad strokes, what are some public health and ecological issues that you should be thinking about when you think about intensive aquaculture? Well, you can sort of divide them up into different the different production types for closed systems or open water systems. But I'll just run down the list and sort of describe to you what each one of these risks, how it relates to aquaculture. Well, for one, when you've got animals grown or raised in very confined spaces with a high density, that is a perfect opportunity for disease. Now, this isn't any different from how humans, being in a close confined space, can share germs. And in these types of operations, veterinary drugs are definitely relied upon as means of keeping the population healthy. It's kind of a population medicine. But and for some species, like salmon, there are sort of designer drugs. There are some vaccines that have been developed, which are great. You can vaccinate the fish. But for other species, maybe not grown in by richer countries or really high-value species, there aren't these nice vaccines available. So there's sort of a more broad-spectrum disease treatment. You could have medicated feed that has antibiotics in it. There are also antiparasitics and insecticides. And some of the antibiotics are also ones, the same classes of antibiotics that you'd use to give to humans. Oftentimes there's allowed groups of veterinary drugs and prohibited groups. And the rules on which are allowed, which are prohibited, differ between countries. There are a couple issues with the use of veterinary drugs. In particular, the residues remaining behind in the meat. There's also an issue of antibiotic resistance developing on the farm environment. And that's what Aaron's going to be talking about a little bit. In addition to residues, some other concerns are using fish as feed for aquaculture. Well, to raise, let's say, a pound of salmon, it may take 2 to 3 pounds of wild-caught fish as feed inputs. And that's concerning in and of itself because it depletes the oceans of fish. But there are other concerns. There's an equity or social justice concern where you take fish from regions of the world where people actually rely on those fish as a source of food, like in parts of Africa. So taking fish as feed may be taking fish from populations that would want to eat those fish. Feeding fish to other fish is a good way to accumulate chemicals like PCBs or mercury, and Charles is going to talk a little bit about that in his talk. that bioaccumulation. There are also environmental threats that occur, that can happen through aquaculture, like fish escapes, particularly in open water systems. You know, in closed systems, fish tries to escape, they jump out, and they flop around, and you pick them up and put them back in. So that's, but in open water systems, if there's a hole ripped in one of these cages, fish can escape, and they're actually on the coast of South America, you can find farmed salmon genes in sort of salmon that live, actually salmon aren't even native to South Africa. So you find salmon in South America, you know, oh, well, these must have been escapes. There are also diseases that that you get inside these industrial operations that can be spread to wild populations. So there's a whole handful of environmental concerns, and thinking about it in terms of, you know, the production method. Well, there's one more. Genetically engineered salmon is a new one this year. The FDA is considering whether or not to allow a salmon with a growth hormone inserted into it, a gene for growth hormone that promotes growth and feed efficiency. Should we allow that as the first genetically engineered food animal? And that's what the FDA is deciding on right now. The basis for that decision are several reports that are unpublished that have been put out by the drug sponsor, the folks who are producing these salmon. And it's a little bit questionable about whether or not they've produced enough data to allay the fears of the public health community, the environmental community, about whether this is going to be something that's safe for us to eat, safe for the environment. So there certainly are concerns with intensive aquaculture. Extensive aquaculture, there are fewer concerns, but I don't think they're any less important. If an operator or a farmer can afford or has access to veterinary drugs, there's always the possibility for misuse. There are another issue is the use of human or animal waste as a nutrient source to feed fish. And this is a little concerning in that pathogen transfer could happen going from the human waste to the fish, and then if you eat the fish, or even more important, the folks who work on the farm who are working in, let's say, a fish pond in a tertiary treated waste facility, you know, there's a chance for human exposure there. So hopefully this is sort of a background to give you a picture, a snapshot of aquaculture, where we're coming from in the public health community, what we're concerned about. Certainly could be very different if this is an aquaculture talk where instead of the risks, we're talking about, oh, there's all these great benefits. There certainly are benefits to raising fish in farms. But I think it's more interesting to talk about the risks. I'm going to leave you with a quote that to sort of tie things up. This is by Sylvia Earle. She wrote a book called The World is Blue. It's a really fantastic kind of synthesis of a lot of these topics. And I think hopefully what you get across through this session is that our food production, our diet, the environment, and our health are all inextricably linked. And aquaculture is a really good case study for thinking about how all these systems are linked. And it's very complicated, and we have a panel of lots of different perspectives to try to address this issue, but really try to think about it from a systems perspective today. So thank you so much.